pleasure to welcome Peter Hug, director of Kitco's Precious Metals Division. He develops better investment strategies for Kitco customers. Welcome, Peter Hug.
It's a pleasure, Chris. Nice to be here.
Reading through some of your latest articles online, and clearly you've noted this trend of increased purchases by ETFs. This is just essentially funds easy to access. You think this could be a good sign that they see something on the horizon?
Well, yeah, we're sort of monitoring this market. There's been an anomaly in this market that I haven't seen in the 40-odd years that I've been in the business. Generally, when you have markets that trend higher, you tend to have retail buying into strength. What we've seen over the past couple of years is that the retail market has actually been selling into strength. They're not believing in the rally, which turns out that they made the right guess on the market. So when gold was over $1,300 and couldn't get through that critical level at 1365, which everybody was looking for at the beginning of this year and a number of occasions over the past 2 years where it hit that level, retail has now started to take money off the table. And as the market came lower, generally when you have a market that's dropping, retail does not sell into weakness. But they've also been selling into weakness. They've just literally been abandoning the market, which indicates to me that we might be getting to a capitulation where people are sort of throwing out the baby with the bathwater and giving up on precious metals as a viable investment to hold in their portfolio. That generally indicates to me we're getting close to a bottom.
Okay, so you're seeing sort of a capitulation moment where investors are just tired. They're saying, hey, wait a minute, look at Google, look at Microsoft, look at some of these high flyers. Technology, for the most part, continues to make these amazing new highs, 50% above the year 2000 peak. Well, history tends to show us that financial conditions tend to swing like a pendulum, and maybe we've overdone it to the negative side here on precious metals. Give us an idea of some of the opportunities you see there, and maybe touch on the insurance aspects.
I did sort of a survey about 3 years ago. I looked sort of back at the history of sort of my history in this business, and I looked back specifically in the 79-80 period when we had the first what people now term as the gold rush, when gold went from roughly about $100 an ounce to $850, and silver ran from about $4 up to $50. That was repeated for silver between the 2008-2011 cycle, and obviously gold went much higher than $850 in 2008-2011 cycle, going all the way to 19.25. I looked in the mirror and I said, let's just compare then and now. And, you know, when I looked at the products that were available in 79-80 and compared them to what products are available now, there's really very little difference in what investors can invest in precious metals, other than back in 79-80, there weren't computers and there weren't ETFs. But other than that, there were pretty much all the products that were offered back then are offered now. Obviously, the mining shares, the mutual funds, physical metals, trading accounts, certificates, paper trading, futures, options, they were all available back in 79-80. And then I tried to recall what kind of speeches I gave in the conferences back in the good old days when Jim Blanchard was alive and he had the gold conference in New Orleans. Looked at what the sort of the pundits then said and what the investors asked me. You know, they asked me the same questions then that they ask me now. And you know, the primary question is, should I buy gold? You know, really, that's not a question just to answer by saying yes or no. You really need to sort of dig a little deeper and find out what the motivation is for the client buying gold. Like, are you buying gold for capital gains purposes? Are you buying it because you think the financial system is going to totally collapse and you're looking for gold as sort of a refuge when the fiat currency system in the world collapses? Are you looking for capital gains in that context? Are you a trader? So, you know, depending on how that question is answered, you can then give clients better advice as to sort of what vehicles to look at when they're looking at precious metals, whether they should be buying physical and taking delivery, whether they should be looking for geographical diversification and holding some of their gold outside of the United States because they don't trust the government or they don't trust the financial system. Should they be looking at futures or options because they can get better leverage on their returns? And again, depending on how those questions are answered, you can then give sort of a better concept of how to hold gold. So if we go into the concept of insurance, which is sort of my second group of investors, which I call sort of the conservative class, that want to hold a percentage of their portfolio in gold as a hedge in case anything happens, maybe not as severe as 2008, 2011, but maybe something like 8% inflation or some kind of geopolitical event that they're protecting against. So they buy this gold as an insurance position. Unfortunately, the pundits that suggest that never sort of complete the thought. They say buy 10% of your position in gold as an insurance position, and they end the sentence there. What you need to add to that sentence is gold is not an be-all where, you know, it's not just the magic elixir for everything that could go wrong in the world. So if you come up with a concept that you want to hold 10% of your portfolio in gold, you have to treat gold the same way you would treat Apple stock, same way you would treat bonds, same way you would treat any other product in your portfolio. In that context, you need to rebalance your portfolio. So if you go into the concept with a 10% insurance position and you bought gold at $800 in 2008, and then in 2011, it's at $1,900. Your position of gold in your portfolio is probably not now 10%, it's probably 18%. You know, at any point between 2008 and 2011, as your gold position increases in percentage terms to your portfolio, you have to sell that portion off to bring it back to 10. Vice versa, if in 2011 you were caught up in the hype and you believed some of the pundits that said gold was going to $5,000 an ounce, your portfolio in 2014, when gold hit roughly 1,050, wasn't worth 10% anymore. It was probably worth 4%. At that point, you needed to buy 6% more to bring your insurance position back to 10. So when you do that, you've always got your protection in your portfolio, but then you're adding to your position when the market is weak, and you're selling your precious metals into strength, but always maintaining your 10% position.
Clearly, investors need to be cautious of the tendency to have wild expectations. And by having a more methodical, scientific method to the investing process, that allows you to have more consistent results. Makes good sense. And it's a better insurance policy overall. Let's talk about some of the other markets you're interested in and some of these other metals that we don't typically think of as precious metals. You've got your eye on a couple of interesting here.
Yeah, we looked at ruthenium approximately 2 years ago. It was trading just under $50. We looked at a long-term chart and we saw that the high on ruthenium was about $350. We looked at the uses. It's primarily used in the electronics industry. We saw that it appeared at the time, and it certainly seems to have borne itself out that the global recovery was starting to generate some legs. So we suggested ruthenium at the $50 level had minimal downside risk. Today, I think it closed at $250. The metal that we really liked was rhodium. Back in 2016, we put a buyout at rhodium when it was at $700. It dipped a little lower than that. I think it got down to a low of $660. Today, rhodium's trading at $2,300. Rhodium, in our opinion, over the next 2 or 3 years has got considerable upside potential. I mean, it's a byproduct of platinum production. Platinum production has dropped severely now due because of some of the strikes in South Africa, but also because platinum is not used or will not be used as much going forward because it's primarily in the catalytic converters of diesel engines. And diesel engines are being phased out both in Europe, and we suspect they will also be phased out in China. The hybrid vehicles that are coming in tend to use more rhodium. There is considerably less rhodium on the market than there is platinum. It's a much, much more difficult metal to mine. So we think there is a squeeze coming in rhodium over the next 2 or 3 years, which could generate a move in rhodium from the current level to at least a double. It could go like it did in 2006 when it went to $10,000 an ounce. We're not that optimistic, but we think at the 2,200-2,300 level, it's still a good intermediate to medium-term buy with our target somewhere around $4,000 over the next 18 months. And we've already picked up a return of almost $1,700 on the trade since we recommended in 2016.
Potential double, maybe put rhodium on the radar screen. Like to move on, though, to the concept of safety, of insurance for the portfolio. There are, economic situations which really requires that precious metals insurance plan, and they're learning that right now in real time, playing out in Venezuela. The U.S. dollar, according to an article here from a major media source, is king in Caracas, Venezuela, hyperinflation approaching 1,000,000%. I'd like your thoughts on whether or not at some point, dollar hegemony may lose its strength, its safe haven qualities. And folks, even in North America, might be looking to the precious metals or the yellow metal as an alternative.
History history certainly bears that out. I mean, going through a number of scenarios since gold became a free trading commodity back in late 72, early 73, there are times when gold acts as an extremely good hedge, and sometimes not only a hedge, but acts as an excellent investment given the circumstances at the time. What people are failing to understand is that gold does move in cycles. So when the Fed in 2008 through the 2011 sort of 12-ish area started to inflate the money supply by creating massive liquidity into the banking system to keep the banking system afloat, and it wasn't only the Fed, it was the ECB, it was the Japanese Central Bank, it was also the British Central Bank. In fact, pretty much every Western central bank in the world was generating massive liquidity, causing interest rates to go down to zero. That created a move into gold because the perception was that that would create inflation. In 2012, the Fed clearly signaled that they were now going to reverse policy, and they started to tighten monetary policy. And as they started to tighten monetary policy, the U.S. dollar got stronger. And as interest rate yields between the U.S. and its competitors, the ECB, started to widen in favor of the United States, you've got the 10-year U.S. Bond now at 3%. You've got the 10-year German Bund trading just south of about 1.2%. So those yields are still widening in favor of the dollar, creating flows into the dollar, into the U.S. stock market. And as a result, those headwinds are causing the commodity complex in general to weaken. We think that this trend is close to being over. We're not in the camp that believes the Fed is going to go another four or five times over the next 2 years. We think the Fed is probably going to maybe raise one more time, two at the outside. And then, if anything, I think in 2019, it's possible the Fed might either stay on hold or start to reverse course and start to weaken rates again, just as the Europeans now start to get into the cycle of tightening. Europeans are about 2 years behind the U.S. central bank in monetary policy. So now then, at that point, you're going to have the dollar weakening and money flowing back into the euro and into other countries whose interest rate policies are now shifting to tightening as opposed to staying on an easing path. And that would be, in our opinion, the accelerant that will take gold up to, I'm not necessarily going to say new highs, but certainly get it up probably closer to the 14-1450 level than from where it is today at 1210.
Now, your analysis, I think, really parallels ours. Firstly, the Fed funds two more rate hikes likely this year, September, December, probably tapering off in 2019, we see as well. Kind of sets the stage, obviously, because as I'm sure you read last week, talking about their QE operations, wrapping that up, almost globally, we've seen the Fed's colleagues holding rates surprisingly and stubbornly low, even in negative territory. Moving on, there's some tensions with Iran. According to the Wall Street Journal today, they're hoarding gold, concerned about sanctions, obviously, from the United States, as are many nations around the world. Do you see any of the geopolitical tensions as a catalyst for higher precious metals prices?
Yeah, I can't say no to that question. I mean, there's obviously the possibility that goes off the rails between the U.S. and Iran. I mean, I don't see it, but the possibility exists, and as long as the tensions are there, that's going to create some kind of a floor to gold, at least from a geopolitical perspective. North Korea, again, I don't see anything actually happening from an actionable point of view. It could get tense again with North Korea, and that certainly is not going to be negative for the metals. If anything, it's going to create at least sort of a cushion floor where people are not going to be aggressively short the market and are going to be a little bit more sanguine in determining that they might want to hold some gold just in case. So again, I consider that a positive for gold. I think what the main catalyst for gold is going to be, though, is going to be more an economics type of play. If the Fed starts to ease again and the dollar comes under pressure, I think that's going to be positive for gold. Right now, it's still a question mark whether or not that 4.2% GDP growth in the second quarter is sustainable and whether the stock market at current levels is sustainable. So if we start seeing shifts there, or if the housing market comes under more pressure and it starts to put some pressure on the financial system, those are all positives for gold to move higher. What you would need to see for gold to really come under continued pressure from these levels would be a strong economy, geopolitical issues being sort of on the sidelines, and the Fed continuously aggressively raising rates without that being a detriment to the stock market. In that pictured scenario, I could see gold drifting down and maybe getting down to about 1150, 1120.
You know, obviously the economy did grow at 4.2%, and we also have, you know, a tick down in the unemployment rate simultaneously to one of the lowest in quite some time. Investors' passion globally for U.S. equities is unabated, and that gives the Fed some wiggle room, but it could continue to put pressure, I think, on the safe haven assets and even commodities. Do you see a point where the metals play catch up with the CRB and crude oil?
If it translates into a consumer price index, that you'll notice that the Fed about three meetings ago started to change the language around inflation. At first, for the last 3 or 4 years, their target was employment rate, and they've surpassed that a year and a half ago, their target there. And then they had a 2% target on inflation.
And they've eclipsed that now.
You know, they're almost using the rounding language. Well, you know, this month it might be 2.3%, but, you know, maybe in 2 months it'll be 1.8%. It should average out around 2%. So if it's sort of averaging out around 2%, maybe a little bit higher, we're not going to get too concerned. Whereas before, 2% was their line in the sand. So they're giving it some flexibility. There looks to me like they're going to allow inflation to run a little bit more aggressively before they really have to step on the gas and raise interest rates to curtail inflation. I think that's at least somewhat positive for the metals. Now, if inflation does get up to 2.5 and stays there, and the Fed now takes this seriously and really starts to tighten, then I think there's going to be short-term pressure in the metals. But they're already getting pressure from the administration. I mean, just last week, Trump came out and basically almost scolded the Fed for raising rates because it was interfering with his economic progress. I mean, it's hurting the housing market with interest rates rising, and it potentially could be a headwind for the equity market. And I think the Trump administration sees that, so they've already started firing some shots over the bow, wanting the Fed to back away from their sort of stance of being more normalized in their rate structure. So that's something that's also worth watching. So if the Fed does back away, I think that's going to hurt the dollar, and I think that's going to be a catalyst to at least get a reasonable rally going in gold.
Obviously, much has been said about this potential trade war between the U.S. and its key trading partners, including Canada above, as well as China, Mexico, and Europe. A lot of blowback on this topic. It certainly hasn't impacted economic growth yet. We don't see any big boosts across the board in inflation, as you might expect. A tariff is essentially a tax, and it impacts almost every level of society.
If these tariffs go through, and I'm still not sure whether this is still just a bargaining chip or whether he's actually going to implement tariffs on $200 billion worth of imported goods from China. Again, I don't think he's thought this through. His base, I want to say this as generously as possible, but I would suggest his base is going to be the one that is the most hurt by this. If he is true to his word that his base is sort of the middle class to lower middle class, that's who he's trying to help and not the upper middle class, a rich category, which is really where he did help on the tax cuts. But on his base, most of these people, you know, don't have the luxury to shop at Tiffany's. You know, they shop at Walmart and they shop at stores that are reasonably priced. Well, if you go into any one of these stores, you'll see that 80-90% of the goods that are in those stores are manufactured in China. So you put a 25% tariff on there, that's going to increase the base cost of the most sort of the general necessities of life. And that, I think, is at that base level is going to increase the inflation rate, and that could have an impact on the metals. So I think when he thinks it all the way through, I'm not sure if he's using this as a negotiating posture or whether he's actually going to put these tariffs on. But if he does, I think it could have a significant slowing impact on the U.S. economy.
I mean, we are seeing some actual taxes, some actual tariffs play out. I mean, you know, our neighbors to the north, Canada, we're seeing an increase across the board for new homes here in the United States to the tune of 10 to 14% on building supplies, primarily lumber imported from Canada. One key example as to where, you know, middle America, really across the board, even the working class, will be paying more if they choose to purchase a new home. Any topicality you'd like to leave with the listeners today?
If you're not invested in the precious metals market, I mean, you know, don't buy gold because your neighbor tells you, or, you know, you go to a conference or something like that. Don't buy it for that reason, but until you at least educate yourself. I mean, again, I'm not trying to sort of promote the company that I work for, but it is a unique company in the sense that on our website, kitco.com, we a lot of information on precious metals that it's given by a variety of analysts from both sides of the fence, bearish and bullish. that outline what their views are on the precious metals, outline various ways to buy and sell precious metals. So I think if you're going to get into precious metals for the first time as an investment, I do think you owe yourself at least to be educated and to understand the markets that you're getting into. So KITCO is a source for that, but there's various other sources out there that where you can get educated. But it is important to understand the investment.
And as we wrap up, any contact information you'd like to leave with the listeners today?
Generally, I write a small little commentary every morning. It's not oriented towards the investor, that is more medium to long-term in focus. It's more orientated towards the day trader that's looking for support resistance lines. And I try to give them sort of my sense of where I think the market is going to go that day. There's been days where there's really been nothing to say. I invite you to go and listen there and to read articles there if you're interested in learning, either my opinion or opinions of other analysts. If you're getting into more esoteric type of product, just the only cautionary note I'd like to give you, I mean, gold, silver, platinum, and palladium have huge liquidity. If you are starting to dip your toe into the more sort of esoteric metals like rhodium and ruthenium, just bear in mind that the spreads are a little wider and the volatility in those markets is usually considerably much more aggressive because the markets are thinner and there's not as many players in the market. So again, if you're getting into the more esoteric side of the market, make sure you're dealing with a dealer that gives you both a bid and an offer, not just an offer, and you understand what you're buying.
Look forward to hearing further thoughts in 2018.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, Chris.